the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Monday podcast. Doug Gottlieb joins me in 5 minutes. So there's a lot of talk, and I see this all the time on the internet. There's a cottage industry about like sports ratings, and they don't really matter. They matter for my show, or they matter for Stephen A. Smith's show, because the higher ratings we get, that'll help us come contract time. But what you have right now is a race for content. It doesn't matter what the ratings are. The NFL was down last year, and everybody had to pay twice as much as their previous contract because you can't live without the NFL. Hockey has no audience, and I mean no audience, no television audience in America at all. It's got no radio audience. It doesn't really do anything on Twitter, social media. Both Canadian and American broadcast deals are 5 times higher than 15 years ago. People need content. It doesn't matter what it is. When I hear about NBA ratings, whether they're good or bad, their next deal is going to be probably close to 50% higher than their previous deal. Does it help that LeBron's out of the playoffs? No. Does it help that now the Brooklyn Nets are ravaged by injuries? The Denver Nuggets' second best player is hurt? No, it doesn't. But it doesn't really matter. For a viewer, me, it ruins my experience. I mean, watching Brooklyn-Milwaukee, there's just no juice in it. We know Brooklyn's better when they're healthy, and now Brooklyn's hurt. So the less talented team will now probably win the series if at least James Harden or Kyrie, one of the two, can come back and play with KD. But whenever you see this stuff on the internet and these media critics, I understand their job. TV ratings really don't matter for sports. They don't. The NBA is down 35% over the last 2 years, but they're still getting 2.7 million, 3.3 million, 4.4 million for playoff series. And there's a lot of mattress companies, Mountain Dew, Pepsi, travel companies, airlines, where there's no better place to put their ad and get eyeballs, especially in the NBA, 18 to 39-year-old eyeballs. What you find is the people that bring up ratings, generally there's some sort of political agenda. I mean, I always laugh at people that criticize the NBA ratings and they say, well, it's the same teams winning every year. It's the same college football teams in the Final Five every year. You want to know who the 4 best college football teams are going to be next year? Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Oklahoma. Shocker. So don't worry about that stuff. Now, I will say this. Denver's Jamal Murray, his absence, I liked Phoenix in this series anyway, but now it's non-competitive. The Clippers and the Jazz. Donovan Mitchell's not 100%. That's why the Clippers are probably going to win this series in 6 games. I don't think Utah's best athlete, Donovan Mitchell, can miss this series, and they can win. With Conley out, Donovan Mitchell at 80%, they don't stand a chance. They just don't have the athletes to match up with Kawhi and Paul George. But in terms of overall ratings, it's just one of these things. A couple of years ago, during the Kaepernick situation, the NFL ratings were down 6 or 7%, and the media just went bonkers. And my takeaway was, In television, they have what they call A, B, C, and D markets. D is very rural. A is cities. B are the burbs. C is outside of the burbs. And D is the country and rural. The Kaepernick situation really hurt the D markets, the C and D markets. It didn't hurt the A and B markets, as they call them in TV. So if anybody's going to get hurt on ratings, it's not the sports. It may be the networks because they can't charge as much for advertising, Fox, CBS, NBC. But the leagues are always going to get their money and the players are always going to get their money. Always. No exceptions. Baseball has been on a downward trajectory for 30 years. 30 years. When they're available, Most of the networks bid on it. And now we've got new streaming services. Amazon is now in the game. Amazon wasn't in the game 10 years ago. Apple could get in the game. So now you have more bidders and these tech companies. I mean, what's an expense for NBC is a rounding error for Amazon. I mean, these tech companies make, they have billion, trillion dollar weekends. I mean, you'll see these companies in Silicon Valley on a good week on the stock market. It's a $1 trillion week. We do not have those at network television. So enjoy the games. Don't worry about the ratings. The leagues always make their money, and the athletes always make theirs. Let's bring in Doug Gottlieb. You know, Doug, it's you and I both would probably agree that, you know, KD outside of LeBron has probably been, when healthy, the best, second best player in the league, or the best player. Certainly an unstoppable force. PJ Tucker, though, does give him clear issues. You can just look at the numbers. He struggles against PJ Tucker. There never was a Michael stopper. There's never been a LeBron stopper. There's never been a Kobe stopper. So you tell me, I am not insinuating PJ Tucker is a KD stopper, but there is a player in this league that gives him, he gets up on him, that gives him trouble. Do you think less of KD because of that, or it's just he's not quite as physical as a Kobe, an MJ, a LeBron? I mean, like Giannis, clearly you push him away from the basket, he is not the same player. He shoots 34% beyond 3 feet. That's why he's not an all-time great player. I mean, I kind of put it in the all-time greats, maybe there's only 12. There is no stopper. There's no real way. I mean, Jordan didn't have great series against Utah. Brian Russell. I mean, Utah was a great defensive team. Jerry Sloan was a great defensive player and coach. What do you make of KD and PJ Tucker, his ability to slow him down clearly?
Well, I would take it a step further. The question I think all of us have is, what would these players look like in the 90s when you could grab and hold guys, right? Now, the difference was there was no zone defense, but that does give us a sense of what, because look, the officiating was a joke. Steve Nash was kind of soft-souled, I thought, after the game where he said, you know, there was some non-basketball sort of plays there. Now, we had to factor in a completely different series, no Harden, and for half of that game, no Kyrie. When they have all three, it's not competitive.
Right.
But the officiating and the ability to get into his body and be brutally physical with him has always been the question mark, right? One, will refs allow you to do it? And two, how does he react? Do I think there's a KD stopper? I do not, because I've seen him against PJ Tucker in the past and ultimately be successful. You know, the thing about PJ Tucker is he's an amazing story, but he's got to give you just enough offense. And right now he is. Because the Nets don't have any other option.
Right.
I think it's a culmination of things. I think it's a team that's not designed to have, if it was a team that was built, hey, KD and all these other guys, then there would be better personnel and they would be more equipped to play this way. They're not built to play that way. So that's part of it. I think the officiating, the change in the officiating, the allowance of outright physical play,
yeah,
that's part of it. I think PJ Tucker is outstanding. And, you know, the weakness to Kevin Durant has been when you can get into his body. You know, he does look just like, you know, he looks like a skeleton playing out there. You're like, God, how does he even stand up? But I also think that we saw a lesser version of this with the Clippers 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago when he was with the Warriors? I don't even remember how many years ago this was. I think it was two seasons ago, right? He was with, and that was the, don't you know who I am? I'm Kevin Durant, right? And he came into LA and in the elimination game, and they're like, we had good defensive schemes. There's nothing we can do. I feel like that day is coming, right? His nickname that he doesn't like is the Slim Reaper. I do feel like that's coming, a superhuman effort. And I think it'll be a culmination of, one, he'll have to take PJ Tucker away from the basket. Right, you can't get to that, can't post up against him. He's just too strong and they let him be too physical. Two, I think the team will adjust to not having anybody else outside of KD in terms of the personnel and the rotations. And three, he's just going to say, fuck it. You know, I'm the best player. and this is what I have. And that's, that actually goes in line with a lot of those other guys. Like, if we went back and tracked Steph and his struggles in the finals, it's always early on the series. MJ has struggled at times. That was kind of early on the series, especially on the road. And although there were series, the Phoenix series was weird, where, remember, they lost at home but won on the road in those series. So I actually think there's more precedent for it. I haven't researched it, but I distinctly remember what you're saying for several players and his ability to adjust. But like, dude, the story of these playoffs is the injuries. I mean, from the Lakers to the Jazz to now the Bucks, you know, I mean, you go around the Nuggets, obviously not having Jamal Murray. I don't know what. And now, again, when we look historically, this is what it looks like. But gosh, it's just struck so many of the best players on the best teams.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Doug, because I went and looked this morning at the last like 2024 playoff series, and over half of them, a player's injury decided the series. I mean, let's be honest. The Toronto Raptors won a championship when LeBron lost Kyrie and Kevin Love. I don't know what it is. Is it, you know, the condensed season? You could make an argument, but Chris Paul and the Rockets had the Warriors dead to rights. He gets hurt. So I don't know.
He got hurt with the Clippers 1 year, right? Remember, he got hurt with the Clippers. There was one that was a suspension. Remember when the Suns had the best record? There was a suspension. Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw got suspended, right? But for the most part, I mean, look, here's one that people forget. When the Cavs came back against the Warriors, right? Do you remember who got hurt in that series? Andrew Bogut. Bogut got hurt in game five. He didn't play for the Warriors again until a couple years later. And now you look and you're like, Andrew Bogut, why does that matter? Well, he's a starting center. He's a great passer. He was a great legal and sometimes illegal screener. He was a rim protector. And more than anything, like, you played one way for a couple years with him as your center, and now you don't. So remember, games five and game six, they didn't have Draymond. And games five through seven, they didn't have Andrew Bogut. That was a huge change in that series. Dramatic change. So this is the NBA. This is the attrition of basketball, the physicality of it. Do I think it's made worse because there was no offseason and limited training camp and some of these guys barely played and it's hard to be in play? Yes. But I also think that, like, this is kind of how it goes. And it's not always the best team. It's the best healthy team that survives.
You know, it's funny. I was asked a question the other day on the air, and it was game seven, KD or Kawhi, who would you take? And I said, you know, the obvious answer for almost everybody is KD. But when Kawhi's on, and I've said this before, I think you've said this before, there are elements of Kawhi, three players that are very similar: Jordan, Kobe, and Kawhi. Now, Kawhi does not have the dramatics or the flair of Kobe. He's not as, I don't think, athletically gifted as MJ. But the hand size, his core, his strength.
The low arc, the flat shot, right? Like, people forget about Jordan was, he was an unbelievable shooter, and it defied logic that it was like flat. Like when Steph Curry shoots the ball, you're like, well, that's how it's supposed to look. When he shoots the ball, you're like, kind of looks flat. And then it goes in. And that was how Jordan was. And that was how Kobe was a little bit. I also think that one of the things that people misremember about Jordan, he wasn't that dramatic at the end of his, when he was winning championships, he had the up and under shot against the Lakers, which I don't know why he didn't just dunk it. But the dunks and all the crazy finishes, like, that was really early Jordan. Later Jordan, championship Jordan, was super efficient, right? It was post up, fadeaway. It was catching on the wing, you know, open, shot fake, make a move, usually going right. Like, yeah, I think there's some Jordan to him. Hand size, defense, toughness. He's a better rebounder than both of them. He's an incredible post player because that's what he played growing up. Flat shot. And then there's a little bit of Duncan to him, right? Where he doesn't talk and there's not the theatrics. So it's hard to wrap your head around, like, why is this guy seen as so good when all these other guys seem so much more spectacular? But he's just a singles and doubles guy. And then there are times in which you're like, holy crap, this guy's really, really good. So yeah, I'm with you. It wasn't me. I don't know if it was McIntyre, Rashad Phillips, who I know you've had on your radio show. He was probably the first to say there's some elements of Jordan. I was like, get the fuck out of here with Jordan. And then you watch, you're like,
right,
you know, it's kind of onto something there. Right? Kobe, yeah. Kobe tried to be Jordan. I think Kawhi has just naturally become this hybrid of Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I always said Kobe's a little like Phil Mickelson. He's the greatest tough shot maker.
Yes.
You know, Jordan to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a,
yes.
I've said, I went to a Laker game probably like 9-10 years ago. And Angie was with me, and I said, how did you think he played tonight? She's like, he played okay. I was like, he was spectacular. She's like, wow. I was like, he didn't take one good shot. He didn't take one. He was Vlad Guerrero's the other guy. Vlad Guerrero. Right?
Yes.
Never like bad, best bad ball hitter. I was like, Kobe Bryant was never open. And yet he made all these shots. And yeah, that's a great point. You, Phil Mickelson's another one, right? Where like, how did he do that? And it's almost like you're in a bad spot. If you're in the fairway with him, you're better off when he's got to be creative. Because now all of a sudden his brain and his skill starts meeting in the middle.
That's where Jordan and Kawhi are similar. Their games, Doug, at the end for Jordan and Kawhi, they're a little mechanical, but they're so efficient because, again, hand size and strength. Kobe's game was never mechanical, ever. But when you, and I don't mean robotic, is that Jordan and Kawhi are, this is what I do.
Yep.
I've got like 2 to 3 set moves, and you're not going to stop them.
Yep.
And you can't.
Yep.
You just can't stop them.
Yep. Like, so obviously, as you know, I coach kids now, and with kids,
right,
and with high school and college players, they call it, what do you got in your bag? Right. It's like all these different moves they can make off the dribble. And they're way more. My son's 12 years old. He shoots shots I could never think to shoot at 12. And frankly, like, I struggle with the Euro step footwork, with the Damian Lillard sidestep jump shot. The Luka step back is different than others. Like, the amount of variety of footwork that these guys all have, it's really outstanding. It's incredible. Kyrie's like that. There's all this shit they can do. But you know what? Meat and potatoes still works, man. And that's what you're talking about. I do think Kawhi can be a little mechanical, or just maybe that's where I draw the Duncan comparisons, right? The big fundamental. I like shot fake, one dribble, hesitation, one more dribble, pull up, whap, runs down the court. You're like, wait, that was so, how'd they not block that? And yet you can't, you know, Michael Jordan would go right. And if you forced him to go left, he'd give you a little Brian Russell push off and he'd come back to his left and shoot the basketball. He'd go to the block. He'd hold up his hand. He wanted to go fade away over his right shoulder. If you sat in his right shoulder, he'd fake and he'd shoot the fade over his left shoulder. Like, it was that simple. And then occasionally he'd go Elijah one, and then shot fake and spin and dunk on you. Like, it was so easy. Like, how do these guys do that? So I think it may not translate nearly as well now because you're seeing all these guys do all these spectacular things with the basketball and they're just, you know, old school shot fake jump shot. And it may be boring, but man, does it work.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast, proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great. FanDuel's offering users the chance to play free. No deposit required. Plus, for those folks who want a deposit, FanDuel's offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. It's sweet. Why do you play on FanDuel? Well, the FanDuel Fantasy is an easy, easy-to-use app. You pick a new team every game. You compete for top cash payouts. Compete against your buddies in head-to-head matchups. For new users, FanDuel's offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with their 20% deposit match. Just go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd. That's it. FanDuel.com/Cowherd for more info. FanDuel.com/Cowherd. They know we sent you there. FanDuel, just more ways to win.
So you're a sports fan, right? That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app, free, recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can, one, see the latest picks and articles from the Action Network gambling experts, two, compare odds from different sports books, and three, track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter.
Right now, just right now, who makes the finals?
Clippers, Nets, because eventually Harden or Kyrie come back.
I'm still Clippers and Nets. Still Clippers and Nets. But God, the Clippers with the 0-2 start. Just sitting there going like, do you want to go home early? can you imagine if they, what if they win the NBA championship and every series they go down 0-2?
Well, also you can tell from Ty Lue, all his combinations, he's trying to figure it out. I mean, there's no question there. It's a team that you've got to massage, and this car, it's got to go to a shop about every third week. He can't quite figure out the lineups.
Well, he does. It takes him a game or two. And they figured out, and they're like, right? He's really good at it. Very good at it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things like, couldn't you have done that, like, I don't know, two games earlier? Part of it is, you know, they haven't played together a bunch. But, I mean, like, Luke Kennard goes from, like, the punchline of every joke to, hey, why don't they have Luke Kennard in the game? I'm like, watch the game. Why is Luke Kennard not in the game? He's gone from you can't play him to you can't play without him. And that's one, Luke being ready, and two, Ty Lue understanding who to put him with and how to find the matchups. It's really kind of really impressive. Like, I thought he made a massive mistake turning down the Lakers a couple years ago, because I mean, he's going to win a championship. He had a chance to win a championship, but you win a championship with the Clippers, who have never gotten out of the second round. And if you're actually paying attention, like, that's coaching, man. He's changing. Yes, they're playing better when they get a little relaxed, but part of it is he's tinkering with those lineups and figuring it out as they go. It's really, really impressive to watch.
Well, let's segue. The guests I've brought on the last couple of days, I've asked college football questions because you're a huge college football fan, went to Oklahoma State. You know Oklahoma very well. You know college football about as well as any guy that played basketball that I know. And my takeaway was, I had Chad Millman on, and my takeaway was, stop bitching. We've all wanted this thing. It's not going to be perfect. College sports are dynastic. They're not built to be fair. The best teams get the better recruiting classes and they dominate. As long as you can, like Mark Few at Gonzaga is going to win 29 games to 33 games for the next 10 years. Nobody in his conference is going to catch him. Now, the one thing about the tournament, I'm a big SEC fan. I think you are. But there is one thing where the SEC has gotten a bit of a break and a pass by the media, is that all of us know that younger athletes, especially younger athletes, we've seen this in the NBA playoffs, can struggle in harsh road environments. And because of the weather in January, most bowl games are closer to the south. So a lot of times southern teams play in these kind of the proximity to their campus, and they have larger fans.
Home games,
I
right?
do think
LSU in the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
LSU in the Sugar Bowl, et cetera.
Yes. Right. I do think if you put, you took an LSU a few years ago up to Lambeau to play Wisconsin, the game was super competitive. You put Notre Dame at home against Georgia, it goes either way. The only thing I'm worried about the whole playoff is, where do you put the games? That's where in Indianapolis, you know, that is where a middle of, that's where, you know, because you can't do cold weather, Doug. You can't do outdoor stadiums, so it has to be like an RCA dome. That's the only concern I have about the 12-team playoff is don't make these all outdoor, warm weather games.
Well, okay, I have some issues with it. First, I'm big on the law of unintended consequences. Okay? So what are the unintended consequences of this? By expanding the playoffs now, and we've already seen this with players opting out of bowl games. Now the bowl games are dead.
Dead.
There's zero reason. And I've been a guy who said, like, hey, if you can put another game on tape and have fun with your buddies, go do it. But I'm telling you now they're dead. You're playing for nothing. The second part is, and this is, it goes along the lines of when you expand the NCAA tournament to 68. If you don't get in, probably getting fired. Like, there's going to be more coaching firings from teams with good seasons. But just this, like, hey, three teams from the SEC or four teams from the SEC got in and you didn't get a sniff, like, you're gone. I think it's a mistake that by overexpanding. I think we're way overthinking this thing. Like, look, if college football, and I believe it, they want the regular season to matter, okay, make your conference champion matter. Have them all I would rather have them all play each other in these big leagues than have it this way. But now it's like, all right, you win the SEC championship, congrats. Now you got to go out and play a couple more games. Like, what was wrong with the four teams? The best team almost always won anyway, right? Like, I don't understand why they don't. There's been some talk of doing this where you put your team kind of into the hopper if you want to qualify for the playoff. And every year they pull out a non-conference game. Like, that I would be super into. You know, and you make it equitable for all the different rights holders. But college football was in need of this. You and I have discussed this a bunch offline. I know you talked about it in your show, which is like, you can't keep throwing out there Alabama and Clemson and hope that the rest of the country cares about it. They just don't. People care about their schools and about their region. And when everything is the Southeast, like, you're going to kill the sport. So I do think this brings hope to the West Coast. I do think it brings hope, more hope to the Midwest. I do think it brings more hope to Texas if they can get it up and running.
By the way, this Aaron Rodgers situation, we won't talk about it too much, but you know, you've had your connections with Aaron through the years. How about Mark Murphy coming out and saying, you know, he's a complicated fella, which, by the way, doesn't really mean anything except for Aaron Rodgers, who would take it personally. So when Murphy said it over the last 2 days, he said, you know, Aaron's a complicated fella. I thought, Mark, a week ago, Mark, you said we probably shouldn't take it public. Aaron's probably the prickliest player in the league. Why in the F would you say that publicly about Aaron Rodgers? It was the first time for me the pendulum swung a little toward Aaron. It was like, Jesus, these people in Green Bay just do not get it. They're Mark Murphy's a Harvard guy, but when I saw that comment, I thought, what are you doing? There's just certain people you have to handle differently. You just don't do that with Aaron. It's just not going to work. It's going to piss him off.
First, let's start with the Harvard guy thing, right? You know what they call the guy who graduates last in medical school? Doctor. Okay, right. That's right. So there's lots of, not everybody is a magna cum laude from Harvard. That said, the crazy part is he's not wrong. Aaron is
right.
Really complicated. You know, as you know, and you and I have discussed, like, I consider him a friend. We haven't talked in a long time. We didn't have a falling out. There was nothing. That's just kind of how his life goes. He's a complicated fella, you know, whereas most of the rest of the world would go like, okay, so he's the starting quarterback for a team that was rebuilt and you won the MVP and you had a home game for the NFC Championship game and they kind of tinker with some things. They fix your offensive line, they think. They re-sign your star running back. What are we mad about? A guy who hasn't played 2 years in college, who's a project quarterback, what are we mad about? So he's a complicated, deep thinker. And I agree with you. Why are you saying anything? Why? What is the win? Can I give you the personal story? I don't know if I've ever told you this.
Yeah.
I was doing the ACC semifinal between Duke, I'm going to say Maryland, right? It was in the 2000, 2008, 2009 variety. And Mike Krzyzewski, with the exception of a couple of times in the NCAA tournament, he's never done those halftime interviews. Doesn't. But we're getting ready to, they're walking off the floor and they grab Chris Collins, who at the time was his associate head coach. Yeah. And they ask Chris Collins a couple of questions and he answers them and come to us. And I'll never forget this. You know, we got like one comment. I'm sitting there next to Tom Brennan, longtime coach of Vermont. And I said, well, that was a missed opportunity. What do you mean? I was like, well, no, I like Chris. Chris is a friend of mine. We're about the same age, a little older than me. But I don't want to hear from Chris Collins. I want to hear from the coach of Team USA. I want to hear from Mike Krzyzewski. And if he doesn't want to do the interview, why are we interviewing the assistant coach? I've been in the locker room at halftime for all these teams, plus my own team. The assistant coach who has the scouting report, he says something. Otherwise, the rest of them, they don't say anything. The head coach is the one doing the talking. So the players are listening to the head coach. Why are we going to listen to the assistant coach? Right. And they were like, I don't want to touch it. Right. We get done. We go to break. And at ESPN in Studio C, which is, there was the, was like the working, everybody's working in the background. I forget what that was called, like the stats guys. Everybody's work cutting tape in the background. It's like a working studio. There's a red phone. The red phone rings. Red phone was like reserved for like five people. And one of them called me and said, like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, halftime? Don't ever, ever do that again. I was like, what did I do? Like, why are you calling out Coach K for not doing the halftime interview? I go, well, because it's bullshit. He can't do two questions. He goes, I'm not disagreeing with that bullshit. But Duke has a relationship with ESPN. If Mike Krzyzewski doesn't want to do the interview, well, fuck, Mike Krzyzewski's not doing the interview. That's the way it goes. Right. And the last thing we need is you screwing up the relationship because you want to make a comment that I was like, well, I'm just a viewer at home who's educated, going like, why am I listening to the assistant coach when nobody listens to the assistant coach? That's the way it works. And he said, and this was really good advice. What's the win? Right? What's the win? What did you win? You won credit? You won credibility for saying being a tough guy? What's the win? Comment on the game or don't comment on the game. But what's the win? That's the thing with Mark Murphy. What was the win in that comment? Especially after you just chastised everybody else for making public comments. Like, what are you doing? Like, do you really want to piss Aaron Rodgers off or do you want him to play quarterback? Because as it stands now, he's got to play quarterback. He's not sitting the whole year. He's not a dope. He's trying to make a point, and you're kind of making the point for him, right? Because his point is more, this is just egos run amok, right? This is, I think what Aaron thinks is, Brian Gutekunst, and this probably is true, he thinks he found a gem in Jordan, and if it's close, he's going to push him out because Jordan's his guy. And then when everybody wants credit, right? I want credit. Mark Murphy is, it's about ego. I have to be heard. You have to hear I have this funny thing to say about Aaron Rodgers. I have to let you in. I have to make you understand. Like, no, man, it doesn't even matter if you told us something that we already know and it proves to be true that Aaron Rodgers is a complicated guy. By saying anything, what is the win there? Congratulations. You proved Aaron's point that the front office is about the front office. And he believes the Packers are about everybody. And you're dividing just as much as his comments have divided. I agree with you. That's an absolute win for Aaron Rodgers when he's been winning only in social media and the reality's been taking L's all offseason.
Yeah. No, you could have said it's a complicated situation. But once you said Aaron's a complicated fella, okay, now it's personal. Now you're calling out your star quarterback.
Yeah, he also, and I don't like, this is a real weird, have you ever heard somebody tell you you're really smart and it be almost condescending and negative? I've had that, like, oh, you're just, you know, but I do think that they could have said, like, look, Aaron's really bright. He's brilliant. He's a very deep thinker. And, you know, like, let's not overthink this thing. He's our quarterback. We love him. And we apparently haven't made it clear enough how we feel about it. That you can say. But yes, when you say complicated fella, right? Like if I say you and your wife have a complicated relationship, that's not a compliment.
Right.
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 How was that deal to launch the volume? Ah, it was complicated. Complicated cannot, by my estimation, in 2021, even if it's accurate, be translated into a positive statement. And so why are you saying that? What? Again, to try and win. And you lost by trying to win.
Well, you know, there's the, you know, I grew up in the country, small town. And there's always this little bit of a low self-esteem in the small town. And some people resent the big city. And there's that saying that we all heard when we were young. You think you're better than me? That's what small town guy often says to bigger city. You think you're better.
You're Hollywood. You've gone Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You've gone Hollywood.
And I think with Aaron, there is that sense in small town Wisconsin, he thinks he's better than us. And that's what kids say when they're high schoolers or, you know, 12 years old. That guy thinks he's better than us. I do. And Aaron doesn't help by putting Hollywood stuff all over social media. But I do think there is this, you know, the average marriage lasts 7 or 8 years. I mean, I think you put up with certain things if somebody's beautiful or somebody's talented. But there's that 7, 8 year mark in relationships, just all of them, where you get tired of people's shit, right? And I think Aaron in Green Bay was bound to be problematic. And I just think they've reached that line where they're tired of each other's shit. And it's okay, by the way. Doesn't mean you don't have two great people. But I mean, Doug, it was never a natural fit. Aaron's sort of a California cool guy. They wear cheese hats. I mean, it's like there are, I mean, like Eli in New York don't feel perfect, but it worked. For some reason, Eli in New York, the country kid, the southern kid, it worked. Favre in Green Bay, to me, it worked. I've never felt Aaron's Green Bay. I feel like Aaron should be the quarterback for the Rams. That's what I feel like.
Well, remember, it wasn't until like 5 years ago, there was nothing in LA. And he always wanted to be with the Niners. So I truly believe that it wasn't just that they lost in the NFC Championship game. It's that they lost to Tom Brady. And think of the two of the quarterbacks who are pissed. Russell Wilson. Okay, so he throws a touchdown pass to Antonio Brown, and Russell Wilson's sitting next to the commissioner of the NFL. You remember this. Right. Antonio Brown worked out with two guys while he was suspended. Two. Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. So, again, I don't know this for a fact, but I've lived long enough on this planet to think he probably went to Seattle and goes like, hey, I can get you AB. And Seattle, being in Seattle, right? They've taken on some other problem children in the past. Being a very liberal city, they're probably like, yeah, going to take a pass on this one. So then he's sitting there and he's sitting next to the commissioner. You're like, are you freaking kidding me? He gets Antonio Brown at the league minimum. They push him through and he's like, are you kidding me? Of course, and you're pissed. So you got Aaron Rodgers. And at the end of the game, you know, they take off their helmets and Tom Brady looks 25 years old. He's got perfect hair. Perfect skin. Aaron Rodgers he's grown his hair long. He's got the beard. He's like, I've spent my whole life slugging it out in fucking Green Bay. And this pretty boy who can't move, can't do the things, manipulate his arm, can't do what I can do at this age. He beat me. He beat me because he had better players. He had better players. That's why he won. He had better players. And I think they're all jealous and envious. You know, I talked to somebody we both know who was in the Colts organization when Peyton was there. And, you know, Peyton has that aw gee shucks thing, right?
Yeah.
But every time they draft a quarterback, Peyton would call, who the F is this? And then Peyton still doesn't like Brock Osweiler, right? Because they tried to let Brock Osweiler play it out and say he was hurt when he had a dead arm his last year in the NFL. Like, those guys are competitive. They see other guys. They make enemies out of people. So it is complicated. I think the Rams thing, I think losing to the Niners, I think losing to Tom Brady, I think bringing in a coach that he is sure he knows more than. I think looking at other teams, I'm like, dude, can we get one of these other dudes that are available? And no, I don't think he's ever been Green Bay. And here's one last thing. This is because you love to talk about relationships and you're far better at them talking about than I am. You know, when the relationship starts with trauma, it sets it on a path to end with drama and trauma.
Right.
Right. So think back to when he was drafted. First, remember, last guy in the green room, supposed to go number one overall, and he's just sitting there and you're like, I feel bad for that guy. Then he sits there. Favre kind of treats him like shit for a couple of years. And then Favre retires. No, I'm not going to retire. Come back. Retire. Come back. Then remember, Favre retired. And then he's like, no, I want to come back. They're like, nah, we're going to give it to Aaron. And the first year they weren't great. He was good. They found ways to lose games they should win. And so then he goes and plays for the Jets. Then he plays for the Vikings and he beats them in their place and goes to the NFC Championship game. So that thing started with trauma and drama. So it shouldn't surprise us if it ends with trauma and drama, because that's how relationships do go. How it ends is many times how it starts.
All right, Doug Gottlieb. Good stuff, man. We got Rodgers, college football, some NBA stuff. Nice job, buddy. And thanks for doing this from an airport in Oklahoma City. Good seeing you, buddy. Thanks.
Later, bro.
All right, everybody. Good stuff by Doug Gottlieb at The Volume Sports. Twitter, Instagram, rate, review, subscribe. We'll have Nick Wright on this week.
The volume.